Well, that was Dawn Zianna Moon, a new singer-songwriter that was scheduled to appear on the first hour of today's show of Left Turn on Bird Street because of technical problems. Oh, we weren't able to schedule the interview. But the name of that song is called Keep Holding On. So, thanks for joining us. You're listening to... excuse me. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, broadcast from the studios of KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Oroville's only radio station, and happens to be a community radio station that is non-profit. So, thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to take a look at our blog, you can do so by visiting us on the internets, as George W. Bush would say, at www.ltobs.blogspot, or you can simply Google us at Left Turn, or rather easier than that is just go to Google and type in LTOBS and we'll show up at the top of your queue. We really like to have you take a look at our blog because we have a very interactive comment section. We have several interesting people, some of the listeners here at Left Turn on Bird Street, and some other listeners from around the world actually who participate, and it can get kind of lively, as our fellow programmer Kathy Stewart knows. And we also, you know, we haven't heard from Alberto lately on our blog, so you know,
since he sent that note to me saying that he couldn't figure out what was the matter with me. I think we hit a nerve with him and made him feel guilty.
Well, maybe, you know, or maybe he's in exile or something like that. He's threatened to put a blog together.
I think they caught him. He broke his probation. He's back in there.
Well, we got several other stories we want to get to. And as usual, we have a lot of stories. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but we start on a story, and then I think I'm bad at this time. I get off on a tangent on something. I'll get on a tangent and tangent, tangent, and I'll keep going. So we've covered two or three stories now. Next story I want to cover, and this was made a little bit of the news last week, although it wasn't huge. It's about a congregation in North Carolina, a small Baptist church. Did you hear about this, Tom?
Oh yes,
yes.
No
Reverend,
Democrats allowed.
Yeah, Reverend Chan Chandler told his the members of his congregation last fall that if they didn't vote for George Bush, they'd either have to leave the church or repent.
Just to bring people up to date on this thing, I'll read a little bit of it. Dems booted from NC, that's North Carolina, church over politics. Waynesville, what a name, Waynesville. Waynestown.
Wait a second, how come every place down south is Ville? I mean, I know we're in Oroville, but, you know, there's not that many Villes. Well, I guess there's Marysville.
You're in one.
Rural areas.
You're in one.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But, yeah, Berg, maybe there's a lot of Bergs and Villes and all this stuff down south.
I can give you, this is another diversion, but it's also an important one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Waynesville is named after Wayne, which is a family name, Patrick Wayne down
right
there.
So Matt Anthony Wayne, perhaps.
Right. And so they would open towns or start towns
right
named after themselves.
Yeah.
Self-edification, or not edification, but another word. Anyway, so you'll see it in California. Developers will do a subdivision, and the streets are named after their kids and their
grandkids,
wives, right?
Yeah.
And so some counties have
wives
rules against that because it got out of hand. You can only have so many Laura streets in a town. Laura Lane, Laura Street, Laura Laura Court.
Anyway,
so it says a pastor of a small Baptist church led an effort to kick out church members because they didn't support President Bush, members said. Now that's important because,
yes,
because it's not just that they were Democrats or that they were if they didn't vote for him, that they were Republicans but not the right kind of Republicans.
Right.
The nine members were voted out on a Monday meeting of the East Waynesville Baptist Church in this mountain town about 120 miles west of Charlotte. WLOS-TV in Asheville reported that 40 other members resigned in protest.
Wow.
It's all over politics, said Selma Morris, the church's treasurer. We've never had a pastor like that before.
Guy sounds like a real rat.
Does Chan Chandler sound like a nickname, by the way?
It sounds like a car salesman. Used car salesman of that.
He's the kind of pastor who says, do it my way or get out, she said. He's real negative all the time. Well, yeah, they are tax deductible, are they not?
Right. This is what's interesting about the story is that, right, churches are tax deductible. And I think at the end of that AP story, the chairman of the Democratic Committee or the Democratic Party in North Carolina kind of threw around the idea, well, geez, this is a tax-exempt organization. They're not supposed to be backing candidates.
Well, there's another church related thing. In, it's either in North Carolina or Virginia, but it's the Liberty
University.
Liberty University.
Yeah, Jerry Falwell's
right.
school.
Well, what they're doing is it's a religious school. They're tax deductible. They have kids, and they're training people, and they go as interns in the White House. And so it's not just having an opinion and expressing it. What's going on now is churches are becoming boot camps for
right.
Republican workers of the most conservative stripe.
Right, right.
And conservative isn't the right word. These are radical right people
yeah, right.
who believe in the God domination of the end of this world.
Yeah, because when you use the word conservative, we're doing a disservice for, you know, whether you agree with them or not.
Conservative would be insulted if
right.
A real
true conservative, like a Barry Goldwater conservative, would be insulted by that. But you know what's interesting about that story, though, is the follow-up to it. I don't know, did you get a chance to read this follow-up? I found this follow-up.
No, what's
this? So the Reverend Chandler, he was back-shuffling because I think he all of a sudden realized, uh-oh, I might lose my tax-free status to make $100,000 a year and not pay property taxes.
And then he's came clear.
Yeah.
Must have been a mistake.
Waynesville,
North Carolina, AP.
Follow up to the original story.
Calling it a great misunderstanding.
Yeah.
The pastor of a small church who led the charge to remove 9 members for their political beliefs tried to welcome them back Sunday, but some insisted he must leave for the wounds to heal. The, you know, this should be the things you don't have to read. It's self-evident, goes without speaking. Anyway, he goes on to say, the Reverend Chan Chandler didn't directly address the controversy during the service at East Waynesville Baptist Church, but issued a statement afterward through his attorney.
He's got his attorney. He got send the attorneys and lawyers, guns, and money.
Did the attorney have to be Christian?
Right.
I bet he's got a Jewish
attorney. He probably does.
He
got a nice,
good ones,
nice Jewish boy from New York City.
A good one.
Yeah, right.
Saying the church does not care about its members' political affiliations. No one has ever been voted from the membership. Voted from the membership of this church due to an individual's support or lack of support for a political party or candidate. He said, "Well, not so far.
We're
going that way. They just didn't get rid of it."
Right.
Well, that's like you say. You know, you get caught robbing a liquor store. Well, I've never done it before.
Right.
Doesn't that count?
Well, you know, so the good Reverend Chan Chandler.
Chandler, get this, 33 years old.
Oh.
You would think that he would buy. He's either old enough to know better or young enough to be a little bit more rebellious than
yeah,
him.
Right. But, you know, I think that the reason the good Reverend Chan Chandler is backpedaling on this all of a sudden is because of his tax status. If he loses his tax status, he's out in the cold. And no money for him, man.
Yeah, it's
no money.
Well, that's the other people worried. It's also money for that board of directors and all.
Right.
Yeah. So hey, we could lose on this
right.
one. Not just lose, but lose money.
Right.
The this all started over politics and our right to vote for whoever we wanted to. Said Thelma Lowe. Not Thelma. I wonder if it's Thelma Lou Lowe. Who has been attending the church for 42 years. She and her husband, Frank, a deacon for the church for 35 years, were among those voted out. I love this quote. "Things will never be the same here until he leaves," she said. After he leaves, we can go back to doing it. And then we won't be caught.
Right. No, I think this lady here was somebody who was actually a Kerry supporter. She's a Democrat.
Right, but
yeah,
the
right.
way she's saying
yeah,
it,
right.
we'll get rid of this one, but later on we'll just go back to business as usual.
Right, right. Well, I think this case really illustrates, it's kind of a microcosm of what's happening with the blending of government and politics. You know,
religion and politics.
Yeah, I'm sorry, religion and politics. Thank you, Tom. It's like about a month ago, my wife Jenny and I were having this conversation. And Jenny's, you know, Jenny, she's pretty liberal-minded, you know, and she, we'd all, for years, we would get into these arguments about prayer in the school. And I said, you know, I'm absolutely against this. Oh, she said, well, it can't do any harm. There's nothing wrong with it, you know. And, you know, we'd go round and round and round and round. But you know what finally convinced her of this, Tom?
No.
And, you know, my wife is well-educated, college-educated, went...
Smart, too.
Yeah, very smart, good editor. Her entire education is a Catholic education from, I mean, kindergarten through college, private, you know, Catholic schools.
Full indoctrination.
Full indoctrination, you know. So this was about the time that the new pope came around, you know, and somehow we, you know, Benedict the 16th, or is he 16th or 17th?
16th.
Okay, Pope Benedict, I guess we can call him that now, right? He came around. Somehow we started talking about the Spanish Inquisitions. And, you know, Jenny was kind of aware of it, but not really that aware. I said, well, you know, somehow we started talking. I said, well, you know, Pope Benedict was basically in charge of the office of Inquisitions. She said, well, what do you mean? So we talked about it. So Jenny was being the curious person. She went on the internets and read about the Spanish Inquisitions, which... Growing up in the Philippines, they never really talked about that much.
That was one page in that church history book.
They kind of glossed over it, you know. They might have said they were missions or something like that. And you know, so later that day or the next day, we were talking about it, and she said, I can't believe all that stuff happened in the Inquisition. We never learned that in school. I said, yeah. I said, and she says, well, now I finally understand why you're so... dead set against prayer in the school. She says, I'd never really looked at it through the prism of the Inquisition.
The torturees point of view.
Right. And the good part of it is after 14 years, I finally got her to my way of thinking, which is really a major accomplishment.
See, that would be 14 years of school, 14 years of marriage.
Right.
You know, they finally balance out, sort of.
Right. Now, this is the scary part. Is Jenny's a pretty open-minded person. Well-educated, smart, and it took her this long to come to that realization. I mean, it took her, what, 40 years, you know, to come to this realization that prayers in schools are not necessarily a good thing. And, you know, and I mean, we talked, we actually have had arguments through the years about this, but much less these people in some of these small congregations that all they hear about is, this goes to another subject, going off on a tangent again, but I was up in Northeast California last week and was doing a lot of driving, and I was listening, just out of curiosity, to, I try to always listen to local radio stations wherever I am. Most of the local radio stations were Christian broadcasters, and you listen to these programs on the Christian Broadcasting not Christian Broadcasting Network, but with a Christian broadcasting bent to them, and they all play themselves as the victim. You know, they are the ones being persecuted. That these judges are out to take their marriage.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. You know, you listen to this, and it's like, you know, they're trying to indoctrinate children into homosexuality in their schools. They're trying to convert them into homosexuals. And you listen to us.
It's really hard to imagine them trying to play this card with the Baptist-oriented president in there.
So I mean, you know, you listen to this, and then you have this mindset, and then you have these preachers like the good Reverend Chan Chandler in North Carolina, and we've discussed this on this show, and we've discussed this many times. Is our country is really moving? I said creeping before, and it's probably not creeping. It's more like lurching towards a theocracy.
Well, there's one aspect that may not be clear from what you said, is that there's nothing wrong with religion, in my opinion. Nothing wrong with religion in schools, provided they're private schools.
Right.
It's religion in public schools, because there's no place you can go to get an education without that indoctrination.
Well, yeah.
If they're using public funds to indoctrinate people to a particular persuasion, there's something wrong with that.
Right.
And I think that Thomas Jefferson and Madison all agreed that, hey, that's your religion. Fine, great, but not public schools, because they needed a neutral ground. The deists needed a world that was not hampered by this sort of indoctrination.
Well, and this brings up another point that Tom mentioned on the air. I think the show after I came back from England, when I had observed in England, I said, you know, you don't really see all these born-agains running around. You don't see really very much religious broadcasting on the air over there. And Tom made a really good point, and I've really, really pondered this point ever since he made it. He says, well, you know, the reason that is because Europe has a longer history than us, and they have seen what happens when you start using religion. It ends up just killing people. It ends up, you know, it's used to wage war, basically. And, you know, Americans, you know, and this is the irony, is like Tom was just saying, our forefathers had the knowledge and wisdom to separate the two of them because they could see what happened in Europe. But it's like we're going backwards. You know, we're going back to, and maybe this fits into the model I've written about. It's like we're returning to an era of feudalism in the United States, and the one of the big components of it is religion, and the other being economic.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I don't know.
You know, there's a great novel mm-hmm. by Stendhal mm-hmm. called The Red and the Black.
Mm-hmm.
Rouge et Noir,
mm-hmm.
and the red is the clergy, and the black is, I got it backwards. Red is the color of, cardinals wear red.
Red.
And black is the government.
Right.
Okay, so it was a whole book, although it's written in a sort of stilted way from the 19th century. It's a great, great book, and even some of the translations are just excellent.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to look at that. It's maybe one of those 600-page novels.
Right.
And I know people are still reading these things.
Red and black.
The red and the black.
Yeah.
And it goes into this whole issue, and it is timeless.
Yeah.
The same problems that were in the Renaissance problem are back again. In the this is just a problem we've had before. We should have solved it. We're getting it back only because, particularly in the United States, our memory is like last week.
Right. Yeah, there's no memory of it whatsoever. And, you know, we've never, you know, in the history of this country, per se, you know, I guess some people could argue the Civil War was based somewhat on religious beliefs. But, you know, we haven't had the history that Europe has in waging wars over religion. And I think, you know, that's the part that's frightening to me, is that I see this joining of the government and religion under one roof. And if you're not in that group, as George, if you're, you know, to use George Bush's words, if you're not with us, you're against us. So all of a sudden, and I think we're really going in that direction. If you're not with the government and their agenda on religion in schools and whatnot, then they're going to view you as being against them. And, you know, that's when you give rise to the whole, persecution. And just,
well,
go ahead.
There's one aspect of this, is that really in our situation right now, today, mm-hmm. the government being involved in religion doesn't have to do with anything to do with actual belief. I don't honestly don't believe Bush is the Christian he claims to be.
True.
It's
religion, it's a tool.
It's a tool of organization
right.
and manipulation of the public. It's a get-out-the-vote move.
Right.
And that's what Rove is good at, get-out-the-vote. He can incite people to go out and vote for issues that they're unclear on, but they are liable to react to.
But, you know, Tom, I agree with you, but, you know, the part that right now that makes it, we're at kind of a bridge right now, because you're right. I don't think Bush is the, you know, Christian that he claims to be. I don't think any of those guys in the Bush administration are. It's just, you're right, it's just a big get out the vote. It's just all politics, it's all show. But the part that's really scary about it, or interesting, that I don't know if it's a split, but you get these guys like this Reverend or Dr. James Dobson. They organize these things like the Justice Sunday. And all of a sudden you have the Senate Majority Leader involving himself in it. And these guys are really, you know, unwittingly or not, they've become really empowered. And, you know, they've become such a power within the Republican Party that they hold great sway. And the Republicans are in power right now. And this is why they're talking about the breaking the filibuster. I mean, it's to appease this loud, well-funded minority of radical right religious zealots that want to take control of the government and inject their form of theology and religion into everybody's life.
One thing feeds on another, and as you know, we've talked, I've been in politics, is that you don't really care how they think. If they vote, you want to tap into it. Because if you can, way back to Tammany Hall, if you can go out and get the bodies, if you can go out and get your neighborhood, if you can come in to the party headquarters and say, I got 40 votes, I can guarantee you.
Right.
They'll talk to you.
Right.
And what's happened, I think, and it's been mentioned in some of the columnists that I follow, that what happened is that Rove and those people have said, well, we can manipulate these guys, and they have, and they got them incited. It may be beyond their control now.
Right.
And, for instance, in just put yourself in the position of George Bush. He's the ne'er-do-well son of a president, always domineered by his mother. And he's not going any place. He's getting on a 40 years old. He's an alcoholic. He's got no place. And so he has an experience, whatever he claims now. But I think Billy Graham took him aside and said, look, if you want to go any place, you're going to have to clean up your act.
Right.
And imagine if I went out and I said, okay, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to AA, and I'm sitting around, and I'm sobering up, and, you know, there's 20 guys here, and, you know, there's three of these things in this town and in the state. I looked it up. There's 3,000 of these. You know how many voters that is?
Right.
My background is politics. If I get those guys organized, I can take 3,000 times 20 over to the – I'm on my way up. I got a chance.
Right.
And I think that's pretty much what has happened with Bush.
Well, Bush, I think even beyond that, he's just a front man for guys like George Shultz and you know, all these other guys.
He's a good political worker.
Yeah,
He's worked on his father's campaigns, and he's a good political operative. He's not a statesman.
Right. But, you know, I think the part that's scary about this, the current state we are right now, is unlike even 5 years ago, much less 20 years ago, is that the monster that they've created is, you know, it's
gotten a life of its own.
It's got a life of its own, and it could eat its creator. And I think that's really what's happening.
Frist is finding this out.
He's finding it out, actually, really, they use Dick Cheney's words, big time, because he's getting eaten by those people, and this guy has presidential aspirations, and he's kowtowing to him, but he's going to go down. I'm telling you, that guy's going down.
Well, what's
going
to happen, you see, is that to every season there is a change.
Right.
And when that does finally change, unless, of course, we end the world before that, he's going to have that, he's going to tide himself to a train that's going the wrong direction.
Right.
He's not going to get off it.
But, you know, aside from that, from the politics of that, you know, you take this in conjunction, what's happening, what happened with this Dr. James Dobson and the Justice Sunday, and the other thing that's kind of happening in the schools now, talk about it a little bit before in the show, was in Kansas, how they want to remove evolution from the science curriculum and replace it with something called creative design. And, you know, so my big concern is we have the monster is becoming more powerful than the creator. And I think, and it's, you know, in all fairness and honesty, you know, I think your mainstream, normal, and you go back 20 or 30 years, maybe even 10 years, mainstream Republican, you know, Chamber of Commerce Republican, you know, these guys, they're out in the cold now, I think, because they're getting taken over, you know, and there's been a lot of prominent Republicans who have come out and expressed this view that there's a great concern within the Republican Party that they're going to be dominated, and they are already being dominated by the religious conservatives, and I think it's unfortunate on many different levels. I mean, just every different level. But from our system of democracy, when you have, you know, a kind of a normal mainstream political party run over by zealots, nothing good can come of it. Not a good thing can come of that whatsoever. So I don't know. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I think it's time to move on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you want to take a little musical break right now?
Well, yes, but I'd like to do the transition with this little, you know,
okay,
because this is important.
Which
I've wanted to know this for sure all my life.
Ice cream?
How ice cream tickles your
brain. Oh, yeah.
And it does.
It does. Go ahead.
This is another from another British newspaper. Who they know the
Guardian.
The Guardian, exactly. Yep. Eating ice cream really does make you happy. No. Scientists have found that a spoonful of the cold stuff lights up the same pleasure center in the brain as winning money or listening to your favorite music.
Wow.
Winning money, it's brighter for me. I'd rather win money than eat ice cream. You know, that's an old saying. See why that guy would rather lie than eat ice cream. That's what my father used to say. Neuroscientists at the Institute of Psychiatry in London scanned the brains of people eating vanilla ice cream. They found a immediate effect on parts of the brain known to activate what people and where when people enjoy themselves. These include the orbitofrontal cortex, the processing area in the front of the brain. The research was carried out by Unilever using ice cream made by Walls.
Oh, I knew the ice cream. That there you had know, to be some if, corporate if, angle if, in if, here.
You know, this sounds like it started from a press release, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
You know, we'll put on this, you know. This goes down in my estimation.
Yeah.
I get that kind of news.
You know, I was thinking about that as I was scooping the ice cream last night. I said, you know, I think Tom's story is rigged, you know. It's kind of like a few years ago, a story came out of UC Davis, University of California, Davis, on how chocolate, the reason people crave chocolate after a meal, particularly that's high in red meat, they crave chocolate. And the theory was, well, you should have chocolate after your
according to
meal.
The Hershey Corporation.
Right. And it was funded by, and the study was conducted at the request of Nestle or Hershey or Mars, one of these big
The question to keep always in your mind whenever you're reading anything anywhere, including this show, is who's telling me this?
Particularly this show.
Yeah, like you can't buy us, so we don't have any X to profit from. But
see, Tom, you read the Unilever. I was wondering who was behind. Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, broadcasting from the beautiful station, beautiful studios of KRBS in downtown Oroville, California. We're at 107.1 on your FM dial. And thanks for listening to us today. We're going to take a short musical break. This is Left Turn on Bird Street. And when we come back, we'll have our last segment. So stay with us.
Wonder where I'd gone. just plain wrong. 'Cause all I need is some peace to get me through this night. All I need is a love to wake me at first light. Someone please tell me, let me know that you can wrap your arms around me and let me know that you're there. Though I try to seem strong, I know that I am not. Tell me together, the battle can be fought. Fought, 'cause all I need is some peace to get me through this night. All I need is a love to wake me at first light. If I run away tonight, would you notice I was gone?
And that was Don Ziana Moon, a singer-songwriter from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the name of the song was Self-Destructive, and subtitled If I Ran Away. So, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, broadcasting from 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. We'd also like to tell our regular listeners that we do not this week have an installment of Escapade and Scandal. We hope to have a new, well, we do have a new episode in the can, but we're trying to track down one of our actors. And Lulu, if you're out there, we want you. We need you.
Actress.
An actor. A lady can be an actor also.
Yeah, they change things like that now.
Right. You know, it can be either way. But Lulu, if you're listening, we have a part written for you. So that's why we don't have an Escapade and Scandal this week. We have it. It's in the can. It's written. We have the script. It's ready to go.
If she'd like to know her character's name.
What's her character's name?
Lulu Skrupansky.
Lulu Skrupansky.
Right. And she likes to go just by Lulu, if you can imagine.
Well, yeah, for our regular listeners, and I guess for our not-so-regular listeners, Escapade and Scandal is our on-air comedy sketch live. It's featuring Tom Nadel, myself, and Marianne Norzer as the
Dipsy
Doodle, the one-legged bartender with a wooden leg who got... Actually, I got to tell you something. This is funny. You know, on our blog, I look at how people do searches, and they come across our blog. And, you know, we had actually several people type in the name Dipsy Doodle, so that came up. And then in one episode, we had Dipsy, she has a wooden leg, her character, and she couldn't get a new leg, and her wooden leg was eaten by termites, and it broke. Somebody actually did a search on Google, wooden leg eaten by termites. Swear to God.
So somebody out there has had that happen to them?
I guess so. I don't know.
Well, that's very good. See, I tell you, I'm prescient.
You are. But I don't know if I'm the only one laughing at it, but I thought it was pretty funny. I don't know about
you. You're the only one subtle enough to get the joke on that.
Yeah,
one.
Right. Anyhow, well, our next show, which will be 2 weeks from today, on what's the 9th? This will be May 23rd. We will have a new installment. We have it, but we'll be performing it, Escapade and Scandal. And that's go ahead, Tom.
I will preview it for you this way. Lulu Skrupansky comes into the One Step Down Lounge in response to a sign in the window that says pianist wanted.
Oh, okay.
Piano player wanted it. And it turns out when she comes in that Scandal recognizes her when she says her name, Why, it was his high school sweetheart that ignored him all the way through it. He's in love. He's, and you'll see. And so
that's like art imitates life, Tom. I was ignored through high school and college. I'm still ignored.
Anyway, she's still not interested in him. But that sets up the tension that makes for good fiction.
Right. Anyhow, so that you have that to look forward to. Mark your calendars. 2 weeks at about this. This time, 2 weeks from now, you'll be enjoying the episode, a new episode of Escapade and Scandal here on Left Turn on Bird Street. So, what do we have left, Tom? I got a few things, but what do you got there? I'll let you pick the next one.
This is a continuing issue for me, at least, and therefore for you.
Yes, yes.
It's the end of the world.
Yeah, it's the end of the world.
December 21st, 2012.
2012. Mark your calendars.
Mayan calendar.
December what?
Conjunction of December 21st.
You mean we're not going to be able to celebrate Christmas? That's
they're not saying it will explode. They're saying that that's when the world starts to end. Because that's the astronomically,
right?
That's when all
beginning of
the
winter.
Every 39,000 years, the Mayans were terrific astronomers,
right?
And
mathematicians also.
Yeah, and they calculated that every 39,000 years, the planets and the stars and the universe becomes into a certain alignment in which all the planets in this solar system, if I think this is right, are in line with all the stars. And anyway, so when that happens, they predict that there's a complete change in the world, whether it ends or if there is some sort of big change. Anyway, big change coming.
December 21st, 2012.
Right.
Okay.
1221202012.
A lot of numbers, not a lot of ones and twos in there, aren't there?
There are whole websites, not just one, but several websites that are set up around this.
Okay. Thing. Go ahead.
Anyway, so here we have from The Guardian again. What a way to go. Super volcano. Robotic rebellion or terrorism? Kate Revilius, the author, asks 10 scientists to name the biggest danger to Earth and assesses the chances of it happening. And they go through these things.
Mm-hmm.
And the 10 are climate change, something called telomere erosion.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
It's a medical doctor at the University of Vienna says every species contains an evolutionary clock ticking through the generations and counting down towards an inevitable extinction date. I know about this. I just didn't remember.
Yeah, okay.
But basically, they're saying is that once you're born, you start to die.
Right.
When a species has died, the evolutionary part deteriorates. It's called entropy. And it says, on the end of every animal's chromosomes are protective caps called telomeres. Without them, our chromosomes would become unstable. Each time a cell divides, it never quite copies its telomere completely. And throughout our lifetime, the telomeres become shorter and shorter and shorter, and you get the message. As the cells multiply, eventually, when they become critically short, we start to see age-related diseases such as cancer, Alzheimer's, heart attacks, and strokes. However, it is not just through our lifetime that telomeres get shorter. My theory is that, this is the guy from Vienna, my theory is that there is a tiny loss of telomere length from one generation to the next, mirroring the process of aging in individuals. Over thousands of generations, the telomere gets eroded down to its critical level. Once at the critical level, we would expect to see outbreaks of age-related diseases occurring earlier in life, and finally, a population crash. Telomere erosion could explain the disappearance of a seemingly successful species, such as Neanderthal man, with no need for external factors such as climate change. Chances of a human population crash due to telomere erosion during the next 70 years is pretty low. But the danger of it? 8. In other words, I should explain that this thing is these two numbers given tell you the likelihood of it happening. And the other is that if it did happen, how likely it would be to exterminate the species, us.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, so among the others are...
That's next on the list.
Viral pandemic, which we've got one brewing right now, one in the east and one in the west. And this is from Professor...
Which pandemics are those?
Well, the one in China. The bird flu.
The avian flu, right. Yeah, right.
And then there's another one that I can't remember the name of that's taking place first in Africa, and there's a showed up in Europe. I'll get some details on that. But anyway, Professor Maria Zambon is a virologist and head of the Health Protection Agency's Influenza Laboratory in London. Within the last century, we have had four major flu epidemics, along with HIV and SARS. Major pandemics sweep the world every century, and it is inevitable that at least one will occur in the future. At the moment, the most serious concern is HIV avian influenza in chickens in Southeast Asia. If this virus learns to transmit from human to human, then it could sweep rapidly around the world. The 1918 influenza outbreak caused 20 million deaths in just 1 year, more than all the people killed in the First World War. A similar outbreak now could have a perhaps even more devastating impact, largely because bigger population, people are closer together, whatever.
Right.
The they rate this one as having a chance of viral pandemic in the next 70 years very, very high.
Oh, yeah, I would believe that.
Danger score, only 3, because once the virus is out, then you can work to scotch it out.
Right.
Then the next is terrorism. And this is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Professor William Wilkinson is chairman of the advisory board for the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence, the University of St. Andrews. Today's society is more vulnerable to terrorism because it is easier for a malevolent group to get hold of the necessary materials, technology, and expertise to make weapons of mass destruction. He goes on to talk about it, but the point is, chances of a major terrorist attack in the next 70 years, very high, danger score, it'll be limited. But now comes some where they start getting really more impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear war, Air Marshal Lord Cardin. Garden is a Liberal Democrat defense spokesman. He says, in theory, a nuclear war could destroy the human civilization, but in practice, I think the same. But in practice, I think the time of that danger is probably past. There are three potential nuclear flashpoints: Middle East, India, Pakistan, and North Korea. Of these, North Korea is the most worrying. Danger score there is 8. That could happen. Chance of global nuclear war fairly low.
That's 8 out of what?
8 of 10.
8 of 10. Okay.
Okay. Meteorite impact. Donald Yeomans is a manager of NASA's Near Earth Object Program, and he says that over very long timescales, the risk of you dying as a result of a near Earth object impact, it doesn't impact if it's near Earth. It only impacts if it hits Earth. Is roughly equivalent.
It's like being a little bit pregnant, huh?
It's roughly the equivalent of the risk of dying in an airplane accident. To cause a serious setback to our civilization, the impactor would have to be around 1.5 kilometers wide or larger. That's pretty big.
Yeah, that is.
But not unheard of. We expect an event of this type every million years or so. The dangers associated with such a large impact are include an enormous amount of dust in the atmosphere, which would substantially shut down sunlight for weeks, thus affecting plant life and crops that sustain life. And there would be global firestorms as a result of re-entering hot ejecta, as it's called, and severe acid rain. Chance of this happening, medium. Danger zone, 5. Robots taking over. This is really interesting.
Oh.
This is very, very risky.
I thought the robots took over California. I thought that's what we have in Arnold Schwarzenegger. But go ahead.
But get this. This is one of the highest of them all.
Uh-huh.
Robot controllers double in complexity, processing power, that is, every year or two. They are now barely at the lower range of vertebrate complexity, but should catch up with us within a half century. By 2050, which is not that far away,
right?
I predict that there will be robots with human-like mental power, with the ability to abstract and generalize. These intelligent machines will grow from us, learn our skills, share our goals and values, and can be, of which we have very few, and can be viewed as children of our minds. Not only will these robots look after us in the home, but they will also carry out complex tasks that currently require human input, such as diagnosing illness and recommending the therapy or cure. They will be our heirs and will offer us the best chance we'll ever get for immortality by uploading ourselves into advanced robots.
I don't know. I like the apocalyptic view of that, that the robots are going to be like a bunch of Arnold Schwarzeneggers running around trying to kill us.
That's what I like.
I like that view better.
Well, so does this guy. He's saying, chance of super intelligent robots who could also turn against us
right
in the next 70 years, high. Danger score 88. If they do become sentient and see what we're doing, sentient and intelligent, we'd be the first things they'd want to get rid of.
Off us right away, man.
I'll kind of skip over the next few. The cosmic ray blast from an exploding star.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible chance of encountering a supernova in the next 70 years, low. Danger score 4. Super volcanoes, on the other hand, Professor Bill McGuire, director of Benfield Hazard Research Center at University of London, says approximately every 50,000 years the Earth experiences a super volcano. More than 1,000 square kilometers of land can be obliterated by pyroclastic ash flows. The surrounding continent is coated in ash, and sulfur gases are ejected into the atmosphere, making a thin veil of sulfuric acid all around the globe and reflecting back sunlight for years to come. Daytime becomes no brighter than a moonlit night. The global damage from a supervolcano depends on where it is and how long the gas stays in the atmosphere. Taupo in New Zealand was the most recent supervolcano about 26,500 years ago. However, the most damaging supervolcano in human history was Toba in Sumatra, Indonesia, 74,000 years ago. Because it was fairly close to the equator, it ejected gas quickly into both hemispheres. Ice core data shows that temperatures were dramatically reduced for 5 to 6 years afterwards, freezing conditions right down to the tropics. A supervolcano is 12 times more likely to than a large meteorite impact. So, the chances of a supervolcano in the next 70 years, very high. Danger score, 7.
Now, of no coincidence, Tom, I got to tell you this. In all honesty, you know what mountain they say in geological terms is going to blow any time?
Lassen.
No.
What?
Mammoth.
Mammoth.
Mammoth, yeah.
That's in California.
Yeah, it's in California. Now, just bear with me. They say that thing in geological terms is going to blow any second, which means any time between now and 100 years from now. Now, if the prevailing winds are right, all that ash is going to dump over in Las Vegas. And if Las Vegas got buried, that would be the end of civilization, would it not?
Would it not?
That would be the end of civilization as we know it. Las Vegas buried under ash. That's it. We're over. We're done.
No gambling.
No gambling.
No Madonna.
No Madonna. No Celine Dion. No Wayne Newton. I mean, come on.
No, not Wayne Newton.
No, Wayne, you're gone. What's next?
Then the last one is the least likely, but the one I'm hoping for. Earth swallowed by a black hole.
Woo!
Richard Wilson is Malincroft Research Professor of Physics at Harvard University. Around 7 years ago, when the relativistic heavy ion collider was being built in the Brookhaven National Laboratory in New York, there was a worry that a state of dense matter could be formed that had never been created before. At the time, this was the largest particle accelerator to have been built, making gold ions crash head-on with immense force. The risk was that this might form a stage that was sufficiently dense to be a black hole gathering matter from the outside. Would the Brookhaven Labs and perhaps the entire would it consume the lab perhaps the entire Earth and end up being swallowed by a black hole created by the new accelerator? Well, the chance of it happening is very exceedingly low. Danger score 10. If it happens, we're gone.
Right. I like the Mammoth Mountain scenario, and what was the other scenario? Oh, I like the robot scenario.
I like the robots, but that's going to take too much time. What I want is the world to end, and I want it to end in my lifetime, because I was told after Louis, just as Louis the 16th was told, après moi, le déluge. After me, the flood. After me, nothing. Well, I want to be the close-up crowd on there.
you want to be here for last call for
last
alcohol.
Call, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've been listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, for better or for worse, I guess. We broadcast from KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us. We'd also like you to invite you to our website, which is at on the internets, which is at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, or you can do a Google and just type in LTOBS. We show at the top of your queue. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you spending some time with us, and we invite you to come back 2 weeks from now, where we'll have a new installment of Escapade and Scandal. Until then, take care, and we're going to leave with some more music from the person we had hoped to interview, but we couldn't because of technical difficulties, Don Sienna Moon. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Keeps me calling Dan and
God. Really? Man.
Hope seems elusive.
Jeez, terrible.
So you're not waiting for the rapture for thank you, huh?
When will this pain of glass reflect the beauty of a song? And the sun pour on your face.
Warm up coffee, I guess.
Take me.